You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast series on the emerging role of oral SERDs, or selective estrogen receptor degraders, in HR-positive, HER2-negative, early breast cancer, or EBC. This is the first of a three-part episode series hosted by Med Learning Group and designed to meet the needs of oncology teams that treat patients with breast cancer. I'm Shpatim, a medical director at Med Learning Group, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about the risk stratification for EBC with a specific focus on molecular testing strategies to inform prognosis and treatment decisions. Joining me today and throughout the series is Dr. Rena Callahan, breast medical oncologist and clinical professor of medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, or UCLA. Dr. Callahan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And I'll start by asking, we typically give patients with HR-positive, HER2-negative early breast cancer endocrine therapy. However, despite the risk reduction, many patients are relapsing and risk of recurrence remains significant. Can you speak a little bit about the unmet need in HR-positive, HER2-negative early breast cancer?
Absolutely. And so I want to bring some positivity to this. We are doing much better with early breast cancer in that most of our patients are cured. However, the unmet need is that a significant proportion of patients still recur with metastatic disease, and metastatic disease for the overwhelming majority of patients is still incurable. Now, these are patients that are often diagnosed at the prime of their life, where they have, 40, 50 years to live, and a diagnosis of metastatic disease carries a median survival of about 5-6 years. So this is completely unacceptable, and we need to do better. The time period over which metastatic recurrences can occur is also a lot longer than many of our patients appreciate. When I meet patients, they often refer to this arbitrary 5-year time point that they need to get through and then assume that they are cured. Now, while that might be true for other malignancies and some other subtypes of breast cancer, for hormone receptor positive breast cancer, the time period of recurrence is completely different, where half of the recurrences occur in the first 5 years, and the other half occur in years 5 to 20, even 5 to 25. So there is this very long-term period of risk. And all told, about 20% even of our stage 1 breast cancers will recur if given enough time. That number increases to 30, even 40% with higher stage disease and with other risk factors as well. So a metastatic recurrence is life-limiting. And so if we want to increase cures, we need to have better therapies to prevent this from happening.
Yeah, thank you so much for putting that into perspective. When we talk about assessing the risk of recurrence and risk stratification in early HR-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer, where are some pearls you want to mention to our audience?
So I like to divide, how I view a breast cancer into two broad categories. There is clinical risk and biologic risk. So by clinical risk, I mean those clinical pathologic risk factors. So this would be tumor size, nodal involvement, the number of positive nodes, the tumor grade, expression levels of estrogen and progesterone receptor, Ki-67 proliferative index, then some patient-specific factors such as age and menopausal status. But then there are the biologic risk factors, are those genomic risk factors. So these are assessed with genomic tools that we have readily available and use in our clinical practice.
Thank you. And focusing specifically on the genomic tools you mentioned to assess the risk of recurrence, we have several recommended. Can you briefly walk us through what they are, their utility, and current recommendations?
Right. So these are gene expression assays, and Oncotype is the most widely used. There is also MammaPrint and others such as Prosigna, EndoPredict, and Breast Cancer Index. Now, they answer slightly different questions and have a different role in assessing prognosis and predicting benefit from certain interventions. So I'll take Oncotype first. It's a 21-gene recurrence score that is prognostic for recurrences, but most importantly, and where it really should be used, is for predicting benefit of chemotherapy or lack thereof. MammaPrint, Prosigna, EndoPredict carry more prognostic weight, but we do use these assays in determining whether or not to give a patient chemotherapy. Then there is Breast Cancer Index, which answers a completely different question altogether. It is prognostic, especially for those recurrences which happen late, but also predictive for benefit or lack thereof of the extension of endocrine therapy from 5 years to 10 years.
Thank you. And as a follow-up to that, are these tools used in conjunction with the patient tumor-specific factors you mentioned, in addition to how are they leveraged kind of like in practice?
Right, absolutely they are. For one, you don't send these assays on all patients. So, for example, if a patient had 6 positive lymph nodes, the validation studies for Oncotype, as well as the guideline recommendations, don't recommend using that test for that purpose to determine chemotherapy benefit. And Breast Cancer Index as well, for 4 or more positive nodes, that's really outside of the validation. And if you try to order it, you would probably be told that it's not guideline recommended, appropriate, etc. So we really should stick to the populations in which these studies have been validated. And then, of course, there is an art of medicine. You know, we have to take the patient in front of us. Not every patient is a candidate for chemotherapy. So if I send Oncotype and the recurrence score comes back in the chemo benefit range, so above 25, so 26 and above, and the patient in front of me is 80 years old with multiple comorbidities, that is a patient for whom I may not choose, or we may not, this is shared decision making with the patient, choose to give adjuvant chemotherapy to. So, of course, we have to take into consideration patient preferences, patient-specific factors. There are also some risk calculators that we use that integrate clinical pathologic factors with the genomic studies. So most commonly used would be one called RSClin, which incorporates those clinical pathologic factors with the Oncotype score to give a more refined assessment of what that benefit of chemotherapy actually is.
Thank you. Some great insights. I do want to have a follow-up question. You mentioned before biologic and genomic risk markers, like ESR1 mutations, ctDNA is another one that's emerging. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that and how this applies to early breast cancer as opposed to metastatic or advanced.
Right. That's a great question. The field of breast cancer and our diagnostics, especially those genomic diagnostics, are changing at an extremely rapid rate. So, you know, by the time this podcast comes out, maybe some things will already be different. So let's take ESR1 first. So what is ESR1? What is an ESR1 mutation? Why is it relevant? It is a mutation in the estrogen receptor that leads to ligand independent, and the ligand is estrogen, a constitutive activation of the estrogen receptor. And so one of our most commonly used therapies, or aromatase inhibitors, works by reducing estrogen. So you're trying to starve an estrogen receptor of the food it needs, or estrogen. But with this ESR1 mutation, it doesn't even need the estrogen or estradiol to send its proliferation signal. So it is a mechanism of resistance to aromatase inhibitors. Now, this is very important, especially in the metastatic setting, because it represents the most common mechanism of resistance to aromatase inhibitor therapy. However, this is an acquired mutation. So generally, it arises under selective pressure of being treated with an aromatase inhibitor, though this doesn't always need to be true. But the time at which you are going to see it is typically later in the course of disease. So at the time a patient develops metastatic recurrence, if you test for an ESR1 mutation, you may find it in 5 to 10%. But if you test again after the next progression, and even again after the next progression after that, you'll find that 40 to 50% will have acquired an ESR1 mutation. It would be very uncommon to see this in early stage breast cancer. So this is not something that we routinely test in early stage breast cancer. Then you bring up circulating tumor DNA, and that is very exciting as well. We are still trying to figure out how to utilize this. What we do know is that having circulating tumor DNA with early breast cancer is prognostic, meaning it's not a good thing. You shouldn't have a circulating tumor DNA, especially not on a tumor-informed assay in which the false positive rate is quite low. It tells us if there is positive circulating tumor DNA for a patient with stage 2 or 3 breast cancer that there is a higher likelihood of developing overt metastatic disease on a scan in the next 6 to 12 months. What it doesn't tell us yet is, what can we do about that? Is there a reasonable intervention that can prevent that outcome from happening? Or does it simply provide some lead time bias and additional anxiety? This is being sorted out with ongoing clinical trials, and I think that this testing definitely has a role moving forward, not just in metastatic breast cancer to monitor response to therapies, but also early breast cancer in hopefully one day being able to escalate and de-escalate therapy. We're just not there yet.
I wanted to end with perhaps a wrap up on any kind of like recent updates on risk recurrence and risk stratification that you've seen, and perhaps as an ending thought on practical considerations about the clinical utilization of these genomic assays, but also personalizing risk stratification overall.
Right. So there have been some exciting presentations at ASCO, as there always are. I think one that deserves special mention is the OPTIMA trial. So the OPTIMA trial was a non-inferiority trial, which enrolled thousands of patients, mostly with node-positive disease, and many were young, meaning closer to 40 to 50 years of age. And it took patients and used a genomic classifier, Prosigna, to look at a score, a threshold, rather, that would be associated with benefit of adjuvant chemo or lack of benefit of adjuvant chemo, and enrolled patients with up to 9 positive lymph nodes. And what was seen was that the genomic classification won. It didn't matter if a patient was younger or if a patient had many positive lymph nodes. There did not seem to be a difference in outcomes if the genomic classifier said that the tumor would not benefit from chemotherapy. So we've had data like this. So we've had some prospective data like this using Oncotype in the RXponder trial, but that only took us up to 3 positive nodes. And the results for women that were under 50 still trended towards a benefit of chemotherapy across recurrence scores. And this data has been picked apart. And, you know, is the benefit of chemotherapy coming from ovarian suppression or not? But in the Optima trial, allowing for ovarian suppression, it really did a better job answering this question. And so I think that oncologists now have some data upon which to make treatment decisions that may involve the omission of chemotherapy in node-positive premenopausal patients. And I think that that's great and is right-sizing treatment. We also had several other trials report out. There was a breast cancer index registry study that has been presented. So this is that test, breast cancer index, that helps us make decisions on whether to recommend 5 or 10 years of adjuvant endocrine therapy. It's great to have tests that are validated, but it's even more important when you can demonstrate that a test has a clinical impact. So it was a survey-based test in which patients and providers were surveyed before and after this testing to determine whether or not it changed minds related to recommending extended endocrine therapy and accepting and complying with the recommendation for extended endocrine therapy. And in short, it did. So it's good to have this data to add to the very strong validation database for this test. There was a study looking at chemotherapy use in women who had low Oncotype scores, so less than or equal to 15, that were young, so less than 50. And what we're finding is that chemotherapy was still used for these patients, probably because they were young. And so, you know, treating physicians don't just go by an Oncotype score. This demonstrates that. It still takes time and comfort and study after study and additional validation to change practice. That's one thing we learned by that. And there was also another Oncotype study looking at it in the neoadjuvant setting. And so I think that this is feasible and helps us and can help us make decisions about whether or not to give a patient with hormone receptor positive breast cancer neoadjuvant chemotherapy, potentially even neoadjuvant endocrine therapy. So there's a lot out there and a growing database for how we're going to use these genomic tests and integrate them into clinical practice.
Thank you, Dr. Callahan, for an excellent overview of restratification in early breast cancer, and also exciting to be on the lookout for what's to come.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
That's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Dr. Callahan for taking the time to speak with us, and thanks to all of you for joining. Please join us on the next podcast in this series. Podcast 2 will discuss some of the data and rationale with oral SERDs in EBC, and the last podcast will cover shared decision-making and considerations around safety profile to optimize outcomes. Hopefully, you're able to tune in and to also explore the many other types of CME programs that MedLearning Group offers. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, or ACCME, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, or ACPE, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center, ANCC, to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I'd like to give a special thank you to Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Thanks again, and have a great day.